Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health and Treaties Negotiations Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about the report released by the Cancer Control Agency earlier this week, which said Māori are twice as likely than non-Māori to die from cancer, as well as a new investment fund announced by him for Ngāpuhi, as well as his comments 2 weeks ago to strip local councils of their water fluoridation powers and give them to DHBs instead. Here's the minister. The Cancer Control Agency report on Tuesday, which found that Māori are twice as likely as non-Māori to die from cancer. So what do you make of the report's findings?
Well, the report was a stock take, so it's about just aggregating a lot of information and knowledge that we already have and putting it in place. One of the reasons we set up the Cancer Control Agency was because we had this pretty inconsistent, pretty variable approach to cancer prevention, diagnosis and treatment around the country. So this now gives us a good starting point. But the thing that blew me away was that comparative statistic that Māori are twice more likely to die from cancer as Pākehā. That tells you we've got a long way to go to make sure that the way we set up our cancer regime is truly equitable. At the same time as we're considering a cancer strategy, we're doing broader health reforms, and part of those health reforms is a Māori health authority. And my expectation is that that authority would have an integral role to play in ensuring that what we do, whether in cancer or in any other health treatment, is going to truly address those inequities that we know exist in our health system.
Are you surprised to see that Māori are twice as likely than non-Māori to die from cancer, or do you expect the report to find such statistics?
It surprised me that that's how glaringly obvious the inequity between Māori and Pākehā is. I know that as we've been rolling out the bowel cancer screening program, that there has been concern that the threshold age at which you're entitled to it is too high for Māori. Māori tends to be diagnosed with bowel cancer at an earlier age on average than Pākehā. And so one of the challenges we've got as we roll that out is actually to make some adjustments to those entitlement thresholds. But I think we'll find a similar thing in a whole lot of types of healthcare and health treatment and diagnosis and other areas as well. So it wasn't a surprise to me for the report to show up some inequity between Māori and Pākehā. It was a surprise and a shock to see just how pronounced that was when it came to cancer treatment.
What is the government going to do to rectify these inequities on cancer?
Well, addressing health inequities is a priority for me and the government and the broader health reforms that we're doing. So we want to make sure that we have a health system that we're at the decision-making level, policy and operational, that the needs of Māori are not treated as secondary, that they actually are integral to the decision-making we have. In terms of cancer, the whole reason for setting up the Cancer Control Agency was to get some consistency, get a whole of country view about what is happening, where the gaps are, what needs to change, and then to work up a strategy that the Cancer Control Agency is then going to oversee and monitor and call us to account on. So with the benefit of the report, they've now produced this top take report, we are now in a position to start thinking about what that strategy looks like.
Right, going into the more specific details that the report has outlined, it said that Pharmac only approved 6 new cancer medicines for funding during the last financial year, which is very far behind than other wealthy countries such as Australia. They approved 66 medicines compared to us. Is the government going to do anything to for Pharmac, like boost funding or even change the entire funding model?
Well, there are two things happening. Well, one thing, we have put additional money into Pharmac specifically for cancer treatment, for cancer drugs. So we've heard that call for that and for Pharmac to kind of catch up in terms of the suite of drugs that it has available for cancer. The second thing is that we have pledged a review of Pharmac on the process of putting together the terms of reference for that. I think for all the good that Pharmac has done in terms of medicine procurement, there clearly are some concerns under his rights to put in place a review to check that the way Pharmac is operating and what they're doing is good overall in terms of New Zealand health, and it's comparable to what's happening in other countries. So that work is underway. Whether or not any more funding will go into Pharmac is a budget question, and budget issues are now's the time here when we're putting together the budget. But I'm not in a position to talk about that until the budget itself is announced.
Right. Moving on away from the Cancer Control Agency report and onto the investment fund for Ngāpuhi that you announced yesterday. So can you tell us what this fund is about?
Yeah, so this is a capital fund at $150 million. It's really, it's at that level, at the proportion of what, if I applied the TRFET formula for treaty settlements, might be the case for Ngāpuhi, but it's really just accepting that we're engaging with Ngāpuhi and we're talking about mandates and how we get to the negotiations for redress of treaty breaches underway, but that's been a long time coming. In the meantime, I know that there are opportunities going begging, particularly in the Rohe, that no Ngāpuhi hapu has the means to take advantage of. So this is a way of saying, well, let's set up this fund. As opportunities, investment opportunities arise, let's make those investments. These will be held for the benefit of Ngāpuhi if at the point we reach agreement with Ngāpuhi on redress and whatever form that takes and with whatever groupings of Ngāpuhi it takes, that is then available to be part of any redress in the agreement. It really came out of an experience I had a couple of years ago when there were some orchards that were available and for sale in Northland that were in the Ngāpuhi Rohe. And some Ngāpuhi hapu were interested in it, but none had the means to make that investment. And then it turned out that an iwi from another part of the country was interested in purchasing them. And I just thought, that's not right. And in the end, they didn't proceed with that purchase. But it kind of highlighted to me that there are potentially opportunities going begging that Ngāpuhi can't take advantage of at the moment. And actually, the Crown ought to assist them to take advantage of those opportunities if they want to at some point in the future by having the means to purchase those sorts of opportunities now.
Is the Crown intending to include this investment fund as part of any treaty settlement, or this will exist regardless of if any settlement is concluded?
Whatever is held by the fund, or the entire fund itself, will be available for any agreement reached with Ngāpuhi or the hapu or Ngāpuhi. Equally, if the hapu or Ngāpuhi don't want it or want to have their redress in a different form or different means, then that's fine. And then eventually all these assets will be sold up and that's fine. But it's really saying Ngāpuhi is missing out on value now. Here's a way of just getting the ball rolling, getting some particularly business assets like orchards, like farms, like forestry, and giving ourselves the means to acquire those for Ngāpuhi and held on behalf of Ngāpuhi and transferred to Ngāpuhi if that's what they want at some point in the future. If they don't want it, then they won't get it, and then there'll be other means that will provide that redress. But it's really just making sure that we have some choice available at the point that we have agreement with the hapu of Ngāpuhi.
Right, and on the negotiations itself, what are the current developments?
The hapu of Ngāpuhi are talking about mandate amongst themselves and within themselves. So as I said at the time that I announced the withdrawal of the recognition of the Tūhorunuku mandate, it's been entirely up to Ngāpuhi how they wanted to come together and what groupings they wanted. So they are forming their own groupings of hapu. They're coming together, and I think there's some positive developments. I think in the next few months we will see, and maybe in a position to start the process of actually having discussions under duly recognised mandates with parts of Ngāpuhi about redress for treaty breaches. Let's see how this year goes.
On to my final topic for this week of water fluoridation. Now, 2 weeks ago at the Labour Party caucus retreat, you said the government is planning to give water to strip local councils of their water fluoridation powers and give them to DHBs instead. Why is the government planning to do that?
We've been talking about that for some time, and that's because I think in the end, the fluoridation of water is actually a health issue. It's one of those preventative measures that can take place, and the councils have had that responsibility in the past, largely because they tend to be the owners of the water supply systems. But they've also proven themselves pretty variable across the country when it comes to considering the issue of fluoridation. every bit of scientific and expert advice we get, and certainly I've had since I've been health minister, is that the one thing that we can do that will make a phenomenal improvement in dental health in New Zealand, particularly for young people, is fluoridated water. We currently don't have fluoridated water supply. Now, it is a health issue, and it is right for those charged with making sure we have good health initiatives and health policy in place to do that, which is why it is right to go to DHBs.
Right, but some groups like Fluoride Free New Zealand in an open letter to you said New Zealand should not fluorinate our water because fluoride is, and I quote, a neurotoxin and it's toxic. What is your response to that?
Yes, in significant volumes it certainly is, but the volume in which it is used to fluoridate water supply for improved dental health care, actually it isn't. And that's been proven over decades and decades and decades of use in water supplies around the world. I said at the time, look, we have to have a public debate about this because there are very loud voices who are opposed to it, and we should all have a good look at the science of it and the evidence of it. What we can't do is be kind of selective about it and make sweeping statements like that without putting a proper context around it. The volumes at which fluoride is put into water supplies is at such a low level that it isn't toxic, but it can make a difference and does make a difference to dental health care.
Right. Apart from water fluoridation, is the government also going to make changes to other aspects to, let's say, make more affordable oral health care to improve our health statistics?
Yeah, look, that's a good question, and it's a big policy area. It is, I think, one of the areas of healthcare and publicly provided healthcare where there is a huge gap is in oral healthcare. We do very little in terms of publicly supported oral healthcare. We do for under 18-year-olds. They get free dental checkups and stuff, but generally for adults, we don't. And we know that there's issues about quality of dental and oral health care for older ages. So, look, that is something I am very keen to look at. The priority issue at the moment is the broader health reforms and the structures within which we make those sorts of decisions. But at some point down the track, we are going to have to confront just the situation with our oral health care and see what further support can be provided on the public purse.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.